There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
A very good evening. You are listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Coming up, we look at water filtering systems, Elon Musk laying off people at Tesla, and a new tyre manufacturing company right here in the UAE. But first, we are going to hear our exclusive interview with Her Excellency Nora Al-Kabi. She is the Minister of Culture and Knowledge Development. She visited the Arabian Radio Network studios recently, and she sat down with Natalie Lindo-Taylor to talk about a range of upcoming cultural programmes, including the Pope's visit to the UAE, the Year of Tolerance, and the 8 principles of governance for the UAE. But she began by outlining her priorities for 2019.
2019 is going to be an exciting year. We got our roadmap set. We do have a strategy that focuses on cultural and creative sector. For us as well, how to stimulate our cultural scene is also to have policies that will enable that cultural scene. We are working on an agenda. We have an agenda already, a cultural agenda. We're also working on announcing a cultural map that will have everything happening in culture related stuff in the UAE, not just for UAE residents and nationals, but also for our guests as well. Therefore, it's going to be a year where our role is how can we spread that, how can we reinforce and encourage sustainability when it comes to our national identity that differentiates us from anyone else.
And there's been a lot of transformation at the ministry. Can you tell us some of the key achievements over the past year since the transformation?
Sure. So it was such an experience for us to, you know, the moment we started focusing on, let's look at the creative scene and the talents, we're very much delighted to see that many things are happening in the UAE. Yet we are not quantifying them to understand that impact that we can work on, not just locally and regionally, but internationally. Last year, we had an event called the Burda Festival, which was basically to celebrate the Islamic culture during the Prophet's birth. We transformed that because we had individuals talking about Islamic architecture, food, and also the history of Islamic culture and when it comes to poetry and calligraphy, which is what made Burda word 14 years ago happen. So this happened. We're working on also some mini versions in the future. We also had the UAE France cultural dialogue. We had cultural events between the UAE and France. We exhibited work from Emirati design talents in Paris with them to know about, you know, our tradition, yet in a different defined design way. Our food, also Sheikh Zayed's visit in 1968 in France before the inception of the union of this country. So we look at such dialogues. The China president visit was also very important to us. Another event, we had a soft launch, is the Zayed Gandhi. We're talking about the Year of Tolerance. So that was a digital quick exhibition that traces the values in common when it comes to both leaders. In March, we're going to have that exhibit in Abu Dhabi, in the UAE, in Manar Saadiyat. And also, we're going to have another one in India happening at the same time to also celebrate both personalities.
And you've touched on this a little bit. The fact that you've made plans for this year, there's lots of things happening, and one of your big focuses is on community engagement. Can you give us an idea about some of the plans for this year?
So what's upcoming is an important visit by the Pope. That is a visit we're also excited about. We're working on certain pre-event that will gather communities from the UAE, whether they're Muslims or Christians, to celebrate that visit. At the end of the day, we are differentiated by the religion, yet we have in common the values that we share in peace and harmony. We also have the Reading Month happening in March. We're going to also have different projects projects across the UAE, across our cultural centres. We're going to work on the space. We need to activate those centres and look at what each centre will have in different emirates that will distinguish it from one to another. Yet the most important thing is how it's targeted to serve the community of that centre.
And you've talked a lot about your department, the ministry, what you've got planned. We saw the fact that it's a year of tolerance. We want to ask people, what does tolerance mean to you? So I'll ask you, what does tolerance mean for you?
Well, to me, it means Sheikh Zayed. It means how we grew up with, working and living with different nationalities, coexistence, harmony, and I feel accepting one another without looking at what differentiates us.
The final question I have. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, the Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, set out his 8 principles, the sort of roadmap for the future. How important to you is it that, as our leader, we've seen an idea of what we need to do to make the nation great?
I feel it's always important to hear from our leaders and look at what makes us all human and makes us a president or a vice president as a as a TV host, similar to any other profession. So what puts us in common is what kind of responsibility do we have for our country and our community? How important to respect one another? How important is to give to this nation and to give to a cause? And I feel these principles are principles that are global, that are applicable to everyone who is willing or to be working in any sector in the UAE or outside of the UAE.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here.
And that was Natalie Lindow Taylor speaking to Her Excellency Noura Al-Kabi, the Minister of Culture and Knowledge Development, who has been visiting the Arabian Radio Network.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Very good evening. You are listening to The Business Breakfast Nightcap. Now, Sprudel is a mineral water concept. You can get still or indeed sparkling filtered water direct from the tap. There's no need for anyone to deliver bottles. There's no single-use plastics. It's a filtration system directly in your office or place of work. Sean Green and now Valentina are the founders of the company. They joined us to speak about how they are changing their approach to selling to get companies to switch from using plastic to their more eco-friendly system.
We had spent the last 5 years going to the business decision makers. Effectively, we were working from the top of the pyramid. And then we realized that the clock is ticking on the environment. The clock is ticking really on a robust economy here globally. And then we've got to change the game and start going to the consumers. So 2019 is really about educating the consumers about why plastic really is a problem.
So that's interesting, because obviously if you're getting water that people are happy and comfortable drinking straight from the tap, and a lot of that is psychological as well, then you're not using the plastic bottles. But let's talk about what we can learn from you with what works in sales and what doesn't here in the UAE. Because you had done the foot soldiering over the last 5 years, you had done the cold calling, and they weren't working for you. Why not?
Mm-hmm. The basic reason it wasn't working is that water is low cost here in the UAE, and there are psychological things attached to drinking from the tap. But the government of the UAE and the government of Dubai has done a wonderful job at providing excellent quality tap water, and the consumers and commercial offices just don't realize that. So there really is no need to get plastic bottled waters, yet customers still continue to do that. It's about education.
But in terms of the cold calling, did you find that just phoning up, I mean, your blog went into a lot of detail about, you know, not being put through, not being able to find the right person, people not wanting to talk to you because they didn't know who you were. I mean, have we decided now that in 2019 that just doesn't work?
Yes and no. I mean, in our business or our line of business, we found that it generally didn't work. You get to the gatekeeper, what we call the gatekeeper, and is it in their interest to pass the information on? Yes or no. Most of the time it's no. Getting in touch with the decision makers is sometimes not very easy over here. So we've decided to use the channel of social media to go direct spread the word out and hopefully it gets to the top.
So you're not going out on sort of sales calls, you're not doing the cold calling. What will you do then? Just social media?
I mean, no, we're still going to do the cold calls. We're still going to do everything that we've done. We were just adding the social media as another type of way to gain traction in the market.
But it sounds like, from what Nao is saying there, that you're also changing who you're targeting. So instead of convincing the big boss, the person in the office, the CEO, the managing director, whoever it happens to be, to bring it in, you're trying to get advocates at the other end of the pyramid to get the staff to ask for it.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're trying to do, is to create that demand. Filtered water in offices should be the new normal. It's the normal most other places. And what we really want to do is get the demand. I work at X office and I expect my employer to no longer offer me plastic bottled water, because it's really bad for the company. Our firm saves companies over 16,000 dirhams depending on their consumption. It's bad for human health and it's bad for the environment.
Do you think that companies are going to listen to the workers in this way? Do you think that the decision makers listen to the people on, not so much the shop floor here in the UAE, more the cubicle floor?
I mean, in a perfect world, we'd hope so. But at the end of the day, if there's going to be people who are wanting plastic free, then hopefully it's going to get to the top. I mean, that's what we're here for. There's no excuse in 2019 for businesses to be drinking plastic bottles.
So I guess how you're changing things up by using more social media as a means of marketing, as a means of perhaps lead generation. But ultimately, when it comes to sales, closing a deal, ABC, always be closing, you're still going to have to talk to some kind of decision maker, someone who has the ability to write a check. Maybe not a huge check, but write a check. That means someone in procurement. Maybe it's an office manager has sign off on things of relatively low value like this. But the sales process doesn't go away, does it? Just because you're using social media.
Right, it doesn't. And in the past, over the last 5 years, we had gone in with an environmental brief. So we were playing on the heartstrings of C-level executives. But just like you said, it's the procurement person that writes the check. So we've changed our brief just to highlight the cost savings, because filtered water is less expensive. It's as good, if not better, and less expensive. And then that really speaks to procurement personnel.
Why do you as a company target businesses rather than consumers? I mean, you've got, rather than having to convince a corporate, wouldn't it be easier to convince someone like me who will feel my conscience twinge a little bit?
Yeah, that's right. But we feel we can make the biggest traction by going to corporates. I mean, it's a huge problem, not just in Dubai. It's a worldwide problem. We need to get away from plastic drinking bottles. And by doing so, over the past 5 years, we've gained the most traction and we can make the biggest impact quickest by going to businesses and changing them, because it trickles down. Once we change a corporate, then the people, if you've got 200, 300 people, then they realise, okay, that's also possible to drink filtered tap water.
We've had a question in from Michael, who has said for him, it's not about the quality of Diwa water. He's fine with that. It's more about the quality of the water after it's been sitting in a building's tank and running through the pipes and the infrastructure within the actual building.
Well, at the end of the day, the holding tank will always be replenished with fresh water. So it's in a constant movement. It's just like the pipes in Dubai. So the water pipes will have a constant flow of water. So there's not much stagnation in most of the buildings here. If the building management or the facilities management have up-to-date certification about cleaning the tanks, it's 100% fine. Every machine we install, we test the water. We've never had any problems.
Sean Green and Nao Valentino, the founders of Sprudel Water Training, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Very good evening. You are listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Now, we've been discussing the man in the news, Elon Musk, and why he's laid off a big chunk of his workforce at Tesla. We've also been hearing about what's moving the markets this week. This is Max Chafkin from Bloomberg Businessweek talking about whether or not Elon Musk has got it right when it comes to the workforce, not just for Tesla making cars, but all the bits of the Elon Musk empire.
You do wonder, and you know, one of the interesting things about Elon Musk and this kind of interlocking group of companies is that there aren't bright lines between them. I mean, you know, Musk is famously going back and forth between SpaceX and Tesla. You know, aspects of the Tesla operation are located very close to SpaceX, and there's shared staff. I mean, they are two different companies, but at times the lines really blur, and it does feel like, you know, maybe while Musk was looking at Tesla's operations and really looking at, we need to, you know, get this company as close to profitable or as profitable as possible, he might have said, hey, maybe it's time to sort of, you know, trim some at SpaceX. So I don't think you're wrong in that assumption.
It's the voice of Max Chafkin of Bloomberg Businessweek talking about some of the changes Elon Musk is making, not just at Tesla, but his other companies as well. So that was one story moving markets late last week and may continue to this week. We've been talking to Khatija Haq of Emirates NBD about other stories, and she says she's very focused at the moment on the shutdown in the United States, the government shutdown. Normally these things last a few days, maybe a week or two, and then they pass, and there's no real lasting impact on either the markets or the economy. But this one's been going on a long time.
The ongoing US government shutdown is something that needs to be watched. Data at the end of last week has already showed that consumer confidence in the US fell to a two-year low in January, largely on the back of that on that government shutdown. If it continues through the first quarter, it could potentially knock a whole percentage point off GDP growth for Q1 in the US. It also means that we don't get any US data releases until that shutdown comes to an end, so we won't be seeing any official data this week. And then finally, it has implications for interest rates, because if you start to see an extended shutdown affecting a longer-term growth outlook for the US, then the Federal Reserve's policy may become slightly more dovish, and then that would have implications, obviously, for the dollar and for our region as well, given that our currency is pegged to the dollar.
I know Khatija and the team will be watching that this week. They're also going to be focused on Brexit as well in terms of international stories. But another one we asked her about, Brandy, was a local story. This new deal between the UAE and Saudi Arabia that was announced yesterday. We'll get Khatija's take in a second. But first of all, you've got the details there. What exactly did we get yesterday? I know I saw the pictures of Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed from Abu Dhabi arriving in Jeddah and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman welcoming him. That's great. But there was some substance behind the style, wasn't there?
It's a 7-point deal, basically, between the two Gulf countries. It covers everything from an exploratory cryptocurrency and testing a digital currency that banks will initially use for cross-border payments, to fast-tracking some customs issues for the big firms in both countries. 41 from Saudi, 40 from the UAE will sort of be pushed through any customs issues, the common market for civil aviation. The two that have grabbed me, and I suspect, I suspect that one of them at least is the same for you. One is an agreement to teach kids basically money management. I'll be interested to see how that's going to happen at a government level, whether that becomes a mandate through schools. I'm not sure. The other is the provision in there for small and medium businesses to basically have a level playing field where SMEs in Saudi can apply for contracts. And I mean, I think we're largely talking about government contracts here because procurement is mentioned, and ditto UAE into Saudi. So effectively, just widening the base of things you can pitch for.
This is Khatija Haq of Emirates NBD. She's head of MENA research, so the UAE and Saudi Arabia, the two economies that she follows most closely. We asked her what the implications might be.
The UAE and Saudi Arabia are already part of a customs union. The GCC itself is a customs union between the six Gulf members. I think what this agreement does is it really signals the desire to strengthen the bilateral ties between the UAE and Saudi Arabia on a number of fronts, all of which should be broadly positive for both economies.
So those are the big grown-up adult economic stories that Brandy and I have been pretending to be interested in this weekend. But the one that really caught both of our imaginations was this.
Like we always do with this time, I go for mine, I get to shine. Now throw your hands up in the sky.
Why has Kanye been making the business pages of the newspapers this weekend, Brandy?
Because his songs are getting shorter.
Tell us more.
Well, not just his songs, Kendrick Lamar's songs, Nicki Minaj, Drake, absolutely everybody who's sort of a hoo-hoo. Country music songs are getting shorter. Let me give you some statistics, for example. Kanye, 2010, he came out with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And on that, he had only two tracks that were less than 3 minutes long. 2016, he came out with The Life of Pablo. Eight tracks were less than 3 minutes long. In fact, on average, the songs on Life of Pablo are 38% shorter than the ones on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. 38%.
That's significant.
Nicki Minaj, Queen, her most recent album, the songs are 11% shorter than on Pink Fridays. Although, interestingly, there's more songs on the album, but the songs are shorter. Ditto if you compare sort of the two most recent albums from Kendrick Lamar, Drake as well. And Drake also, like Nicki Minaj, his albums are getting longer, but the songs are getting shorter. And people are pointing to streaming.
And that's because you get paid per song that people stream to, not by how long they listen. So, for example, if you're like a 1970s experimental album and you've just got two songs, one on each side, you would get paid just once for each track that played. However, if you chop that up into 13 individual songs of 2 minutes, you get paid 13 times. I'm exaggerating for effect, but that's the basic principle, isn't it? And that, the theory goes, is why these artists are having more tracks, because they get paid per track.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, exactly. And it's not quite as simple as thinking, well, if I'm going to get paid the same, why would I write a 3.5 minute song when I could write a 2 minute song? I don't think that that's necessarily the thinking. But as you say, more tracks that are shorter rather than less tracks that are longer, you're going to get more money.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Very good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Now, we've been speaking to Edwin Lammers, who's the Vice President of Commercial and Business Development in Abu Dhabi at the Kizad Free Zone. That's the Khalifa Industrial Zone, Abu Dhabi. He began by telling us about a new tyre factory in Kizad that Chinese investors are building. It's called Roadbot, and it's got the capacity to churn up to 4 million tyres a year.
The 4 million tyres, and that's even the start of it. The proud thing for us is that we're going to be able to establish something which is new, not being seen yet in the UAE or in the Middle East, of this scale, bringing Chinese investments across to Abu Dhabi along the Belt and Road Initiative. And this is the first serious factory that is taking benefit of it.
So it's called Roadbot, which is not a name I've heard of. There are names we think of with tyres, you know, Goodyear, Pirelli and what have you. This is a new one. Roadbot, you say, is a new brand for the UAE, but the Chinese company behind it has a long track record of making tyres in China. Give us the background.
Tyrebot is the company in China who is producing for a number of large global brands already in concession. Besides that, they are producing their own tyres. And their desire is now to come to the UAE to produce the first made in UAE tyre under their own brand, under their own name, besides the concession they have on other big brands.
So how did you guys get them in? Because building something of this size and attracting it to your facility, I mean, you know, there's a lot of negotiation that goes with that. What were you able to put on the table that made them think, yeah, KZ's exactly where we want to be?
The relationship between the Chinese government and the Abu Dhabi government along the Belt and Road Initiative was last year emphasized by the visit of President Xi Jinping. And with the discussions of the development of the Chinese government of establishing themselves a large scale with the manufacturing capacity in KZ helped us to provide the right package to a company like this to come in.
And what does that package look like? Because in a lot of countries, it's things like tax cuts or 4 years tax exemption, and that obviously isn't what we're offering here.
They see a bigger picture. It goes without saying that they benefit from all sorts of free zone incentives for which are applicable to any of the investors. But they see the future of moving out of China, which is being promoted very much by the Chinese government, and to use Abu Dhabi as a location from where you can both conquer the UAE market and export into the world.
And how much will this then be almost a sales tool for you for other big manufacturers coming here, that you'll be able to show them that this works and this is what Roadbot has been able to do?
For us, the automotive industry is very key. So we can see that with this, on top of the complete build units that are already being handled a lot through Al Futtaim and Hassan Abboud through our areas, we can build on this automotive cluster where the tyre manufacturing part is one of it, but you need to look at other spare part opportunities as well.
One of the things we saw, we covered the story a week to 10 days ago, was Abu Dhabi looking into cutting the energy prices it charges to big industrial companies. Because whatever you're making, aluminium, tyres, frozen chickens, energy is a big part of the industrial manufacturing process. To what extent were they looking at those energy prices, access to cheap energy, as part of the reasons for setting up in Abu Dhabi?
Any business coming down to any location will look at the total package. For this company, of course, the low utility prices in Abu Dhabi was very key in order to have a feasible business. But they also see the bigger strategic picture of establishing yourself as a Chinese company in the UAE and be able to produce something with a made in UAE brand.
Let's take a step back and look at Qizad and where you go from here in 2019. We're back in business and looking at that. I was up there 4 weeks ago, looking at the aluminium plant that they've got there. Not the EGA aluminium plant, but the one next door to it, where they're making aluminium pipes and rods, for example, for the electricity industry. And it's clearly going well for the handful of businesses that are there. But it's early days for Qizad, isn't it? And inevitably, we compare it to Jebel Ali here in Dubai. What's your strategy for 2019 to attract more companies like this? Because they do have a bunch of options, don't they, Edwin? Just here in the UAE, within 150 kilometres of you, they've probably got 10 or 15 different options for setting up an industrial company.
For sure. But what you need to realise that we have not only the availability of resources, for example, with EGA having aluminium available for downstream manufacturing of aluminium products, or Emirates Steel having steel products available, Borouge with their plastics. If you combine all these elements together with the abundance of space, connectivity to a deep draft port, I think you have a lot of elements together which will make it attractive for enhancing the in-country value. At this moment, we use the natural resources of the government to export them very much. But by this, we can really support the government's objective to turn those resources into more added value into the country.
So which kind of industries do you think you'd be attracting? Because when I drove up there, I drove past a massive chicken processing plant. I think it's Sadia Chickens, a Brazilian company, was there. I went to Ducab, which is the cable company. The massive aluminium smelter is clearly there. We can see that. That's kind of big, heavy industry. Is that essentially what this tyre factory is? Massive, 4 million tyres a year. Is it essentially just that large-scale manufacturing, or do SMEs have a role to play in Qizad?
The total ecosystem needs to be there for large industries to develop themselves. When you establish a large key player like an EGA or Sadia Chicken, it offers a lot of opportunities for SMEs to come and get yourself around these kind of companies in order to be part of that supply chain. And the way we have structured the development of our Qizad area is to make sure that we can accommodate them closely to those large anchor tenants and make sure that we can create a throughout supply chain solution for them.
So what's in the pipeline for 2019? I'm sure there's a lot you can't tell me, but what can you tell me?
We have a lot of ambitions on the automotive industry. With Roadbot upcoming now, it just emphasizes which direction we are heading into. We recently launched Qizad Polymers Park in cooperation with ADNOC, which shows that on the plastics downstream, we see a lot of opportunities. So if you take that into account, together with food and aluminium, we have a lot of opportunities to work on in the coming year.
There's clearly a lot to be done, so we're going to let you go and head off down the road back to Abu Dhabi. But we really appreciate you joining us today. Thanks for sharing stories of the new tyre factory opening up down in Qizad. Edwin Lammers is the Vice President of Commercial and Business Development at Qizad, the Khalifa Industrial Zone Abu Dhabi, to give it its full title. And we really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
That's it for the Business Breakfast Nightcap. Thanks very much indeed for listening. We're back tomorrow morning from 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.